It's very clear what the Trump administration wants from China, which is a lower trade deficit.
China seeks clarifications on U.S. trade policies. It's Thursday, March 1st. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the U.S. Special Envoy to North Korea retires. Nobel laureates condemn Rohingya crisis. Philippines children at risk from vaccine. A people-carrying robot. Ariana Grande's musical absence. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China's top economic advisor to President Xi Jinping is in Washington this week for talks with U.S. officials amid rising trade tensions. Liu He is meeting with Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, and President Donald Trump's economic advisor Gary Cohn. Friday, Mr. Trump said he didn't think the United States has ever had a better relationship with China than it has right now. He said the only thing that can get in the way is trade, describing it as one-sided. Tuesday, the Commerce Department recommended raising import duties on Chinese imports of aluminum foil it said are being sold at unfairly low prices. The Trump administration has also expressed concern over steel imports and raised duties on washing machines and solar panels, while considering actions to punish China for alleged intellectual property theft. While China has threatened to retaliate, its Commerce Ministry Tuesday removed anti-dumping and anti-subsidy duties on U.S. white-feathered broiler chickens following a World Trade Organization ruling. Patrick Chovanec, chief strategist at New York-based Silvercrest Asset Management, tells VOA the future of trade ties may be linked to the rising fortunes of one White House official, who he says may or may not be passing along good advice.
On the U.S. side, the elevation of Peter Navarro, who is an uber hawk, not just on trade, but also on China specifically, to a position very close to the president in the White House, has raised some speculation that maybe the Trump administration is poised to take a much harder line on trade with China. Up until now, the Trump administration has actually been surprisingly soft on China, given the rhetoric during the campaign. And that's been because they've been eager to have China's cooperation on North Korea, and maybe also because they've been preoccupied with other trade issues like NAFTA. But Navarro becoming special assistant to the president, people think maybe that means that there's going to be more trade friction with China ahead. He is an economist, but mostly he's known for writing a book, which he turned into a movie called Death by China, which basically says that China is an economic enemy of the United States. And so you can see how that might lead to a little bit of friction. I think that when you talk to most people who know China well, they don't hold Navarro or his book in very high regard. I think there's plenty to criticize in China's behavior, but I think that Navarro has approached it with a kind of one-dimensional point of view, and I think there are a lot of people who are concerned about the advice that he might be giving President Trump.
Amid the talk of a variety of trade actions by the Trump administration, Chovanec says the Chinese have not seen anything too much out of the ordinary from Trump so far.
It's very clear what the Trump administration wants from China, which is a lower trade deficit. But substantively, what it wants from China, the structural changes to its economy that will allow China to achieve that, that's much less clear. And what we've seen so far from the Trump administration has actually been some fairly conventional moves. The kind of tariffs that we've seen are things that the Obama administration did, the Bush administration did before them. And so really the question is, are they going to do something that represents a more serious break from that and a more confrontational point of view? Of course, the Chinese are never happy when there are trade disputes, but the trade disputes up till now have been pretty conventional, and we'll see whether that continues to be the case or whether there's a more radical shift in policy.
Patrick Chovanec said the talks in Washington coincide with a move to change the Chinese constitution to allow President Xi Jinping to remain in office indefinitely. He said there is a view that such a move would allow Mr. Xi to concentrate on implementing much talked about but potentially costly and risky reforms in the economy. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOANews.com. United Nations says North Korea shipped banned items to Syria and Myanmar. Ghani offers unconditional talks, legitimacy to Afghan Taliban. Dengue fever vaccine causing panic, political strife in Philippines. Indonesia seizes yacht wanted by United States in probe of Malaysia. Indians pay tribute to Bollywood icon. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, also on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The special U.S. envoy to North Korea announced he is retiring. Joseph Yun has been an advocate of engagement with Pyongyang. His imminent departure leaves a gap in U.S. diplomatic efforts aimed at a denuclearized Korean peninsula. But U.S. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert says there will be no change in policy.
This was a personal decision. It's something that Ambassador Yoon had made clear to the State Department. He had a conversation with Secretary Tillerson about it. We're certainly sorry to see him go, but we're fully confident that we have terrific, qualified, experienced people who will take this on and continue our maximum pressure campaign. Our policy has not changed. We continue to push ahead and forge ahead with our maximum pressure campaign that extends well beyond the State Department, also the Department of Treasury, the White House, the NSC, and other cabinet departments as well. The top national security issue for this administration has been and remains to this day the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Working on the maximum pressure campaign to try to stop North Korea from developing its ballistic and nuclear weapons programs. That is clear all along. If somebody chooses to retire, that does not change our policy. This is not a change in our policy or our intent in pushing forward with that policy in any way.
The 63-year-old Yoon told CBS News the decision was his. He said after 32 years in the Foreign Service, the time was right. The Trump administration also has yet to nominate an ambassador to South Korea. Stephen Norper, senior director at the New York-based Korea Society, was asked by VOA's Victor Beatty whether the Yoon departure is a problem for the administration at a time when Pyongyang is signaling its wish to talk with the United States.
Well, it is in terms of the representation of a pro-engagement voice. The international community will look at it and perhaps perceive the United States as pursuing a harder line because it doesn't have that alternative.
Frank Januzzi, an East Asia expert at the Mansfield Foundation, tweeted, "This is exceptionally bad news. Joe Yun is the only senior official left at the State Department who has experience in dealing with the complexities of North Korea policy."
Well, that's right, and Frank Januzzi is absolutely correct in that regard. He was the senior-most voice dealing specifically with the North Korea issue, and he represented a path that really was for engagement that allowed the United States and North Korea hopefully to sit down without preconditions, and that became the stumbling block, and one would suppose is the rationale for Ambassador Yoon's departure.
That comes after President Trump indicated on Monday that the U.S. is willing to talk to the North, but only if the conditions are right. What might that mean?
Well, it means that the U.S. is insisting on abandonment of the nuclear front from the onset, meaning denuclearization as a precondition for talks. Ambassador Yoon and others have advocated that that is a good long-term goal. That's the end point, denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula. But Ambassador Yoon and at one point Secretary Tillerson suggested that there be no preconditions, that getting to the table was all critical, especially given the high state of tension around the Korean Peninsula.
Of course, on Friday, you know, Washington announced its largest package of sanctions yet on North Korea. In Geneva Tuesday, the North Korean envoy to the UN Conference on Disarmament, Han Tae-song, dismissed sanctions as ineffective, said plans by Seoul and Washington to resume those joint military exercises would harm, quote, the current positive process of improved inter-Korean relations.
Right, and so sanctions do seem to be having an initial bite. There are indications that it is having an impact, and South Korean President Moon Jae-in has said that the tougher campaign by the United States, South Korea, Japan, and the international community is what has moved North Korea to the inter-Korean talks. Despite the North Korean envoy's comments, there does seem to be an effectiveness to the process. In terms of the military exercises, that is an area that we'll have to watch closely because it may be perceived by North Korea as a threat, and North Korea may choose to respond. However, the United States and South Korea has said that those will proceed in April, and that there will be the follow-on Full Eagle exercises, which is actually joint training that will see the deployment of forces in the latter case. And that will take place in May, so that may be a very tense time for relations around the peninsula.
Stephen Norper views North Korean General Kim Jong-chol's statement of interest in talks with the U.S. as potentially significant. Kim expressed his view twice in talks with South Korean officials at the close of the Winter Olympic Games. Norper said talks could be an avenue to a moratorium on the North's nuclear program, despite previous statements their program is non-negotiable. Happening now in Asia, the Takata airbag scandal is impacting motorists in Australia. The government has ordered the recall of more than 2 million vehicles fitted with faulty equipment, marking the largest product recall of its kind in the country. The manufacturing flaw has been linked to at least 18 deaths, 180 injuries globally. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Three Nobel Peace laureates Wednesday accused Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi and the nation's military of genocide for their role in violence that has forced hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims to flee to Bangladesh. VOA Asia's Ira Melman has more.
The laureates, who are on a week-long trip to Bangladesh to visit the sprawling refugee camps where the Rohingya are living, said at a news conference in Dhaka that their fellow Nobel Peace laureate, Aung San Suu Kyi, cannot avoid responsibility for the situation. One of the laureates, Yemen's Tawakkul Karman, urged Suu Kyi to wake up or face prosecution.
He's now the chancellor of the Myanmar government, and she's silent. She didn't tell the truth to the world. She should stop her silence. She should wake up and stop this genocide. There is no word other than genocide. Any other definition, it's another crime against the Rohingya people.
Carmen's two colleagues, Northern Ireland's Mairead Maguire and Iran's Shirin Ebadi, promised to work to bring those responsible to justice. All of them were emotionally charged as they unanimously called the violence against the Rohingya genocide. There is no other definition. It is genocide. Genocide against innocent people, said Carmen. Millions of people have been displaced from their cities. Women have been raped. All the women. We met like 100 women. All of them had been raped. She said they were overwhelmed as they talked to children. Most of the children we met, she said, fled to Bangladesh without their families. Their fathers, their mothers have been killed, been murdered. Maguire said they were looking for legal options to ensure justice.
If we remain silent, we are indeed complicit with this crime of genocide, this crime of inhumanity, this cruelty, this desperation to destroy a people. That is why, as the Nobel Peace Laureates, we accuse the Myanmar government and their military of the crime of genocide. That is why we plan to take the Myanmar government to the International Court of Justice.
Ebadi blasted her native country, Iran, and other Middle Eastern Islamic nations, including Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates, for not doing enough for the Rohingya. The laureates also met Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina and promised to work toward solving the crisis. Some 700,000 Rohingya have fled to Bangladesh since late August after a crackdown by Myanmar's military. In November, Myanmar and Bangladesh signed an agreement to gradually repatriate Rohingya in safety, security, and dignity, but that process has been delayed. The Buddhist-majority Myanmar does not recognize the Rohingya as an official ethnic group, and they face intense discrimination and persecution. Myanmar authorities maintain that security operations in Rakhine State have been aimed at clearing out insurgents. Bangladesh, for its part, says it will not repatriate any Rohingya against their will, but has urged the international community to continue to pressure Myanmar to create conditions for a sustainable repatriation. Ira Melman, VOA Asia.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Beijing has released new measures to further ease investment by Taiwan firms. Taiwan alerts its companies and people to exercise prudence and not rush to China's embrace. Beijing considers Taiwan a renegade province and vows to eventually reclaim it. The story and many more may be seen on VOA 60 online. Also stop by VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a faulty dengue fever vaccine has set off mass panic over immunization shots and a political storm in the Philippines following the deaths of three children. The Philippine House of Representatives Public Affairs Bureau says the dengue fever vaccine, Denvaxia, poses health risks to more than 700,000 schoolchildren who were inoculated. The mosquito-borne disease has killed three children despite the use of the vaccine, which the government ultimately has banned. Renato Reyes is Secretary General of the Manila-based Bagong Alansang Makabaya Alliance of Social Causes.
It's a serious issue given that kids who had no previous experience of dengue may develop severe form of dengue if they get infected now after the vaccination. It has become a great cause of concern, so much so that one of the unintended consequences of the whole issue is that there's been a drop in people availing of vaccination programs because there's like fear that all sorts of vaccination, not just the dengue vaccination, would have adverse effects on children.
The World Health Organization warned in December that people who have never been infected should avoid dengue-vaxia. That month, President Rodrigo Duterte's health secretary ordered the vaccinations to stop and remaining stocks returned to the pharmaceutical company. The manufacturer, France-based Sanofi Pasteur, has refused to refund money for used vaccinations, insisting its vaccine is safe. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for contributing this report. This news alert from VOA Asia, community leaders say hundreds of Rohingya living on a thin stretch of land between Bangladesh and Myanmar have crossed into Bangladesh after soldiers from Myanmar threatened them. More than 600,000 Rohingya fled after violence last year in what the United Nations has called genocide. Big stories and great features are found every day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, robotic wheelchairs are already available in some countries. But what if a disabled person needs to travel over a bumpy stretch of road or climb stairs? A lab in South Korea is experimenting with a walking robot with a comfortable seat for a human operator. We get comfortable as VOA's George Pudich carries us through the story.
The robot named Hubo FX2 is a 270-kilogram machine that can easily carry a 70-kilogram passenger. Using special handles called data arms, the person in the seat can also control its arms and hands. One of the objects the robot recently handled is the Winter Olympics torch during the torch relay. Director of the Hubo Laboratory, Professor Oh Jun-ho, says such robots could carry people over rugged terrain.
There will be a limit for people to move by wheels in the future. In this case, we have to use a robot with legs. This robot can be used as means of transport when there are bumpy roads or stairs.
South Korea plans to use 85 robots built by Huba Lab to help with security, cleaning, and giving information to the Winter Olympics visitors and athletes. George Putich, VOA News.
Pop star Ariana Grande was all set to attend a benefit concert in the UK and then mysteriously was a no-show. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald stops by to tell us what happened.
Going to be a significant part of the Brit Awards ceremony that happened on February 21st in London. Now, the Brit Awards are Britain's biggest mainstream pop awards, and one of the highlights of the evening was to be Ariana Grande paying tribute to the victims of a May suicide bombing in Manchester. An attacker claimed 22 lives and injured 120 at the Manchester Arena following a performance by Ariana back in May. 1 month later, Ariana Grande returned to Manchester and hosted a massive charity concert which benefited victims and their families. Well, this week, one day before the Brit Awards, Ariana's people contacted the Brit Award producers and said she wouldn't be able to come. So this sent everybody scrambling. Finally, after a lot of back and forth, Liam Gallagher, a Manchester native and the former member of Oasis, stepped in to take Ariana's place. On Thursday, we learned that Ariana Grande pulled out on doctor's orders. She has an undisclosed illness that left her not only too sick to perform, but even too sick to fly. She really wanted to go over there. That's what her people say. But they said, no, no way. You got to stay in bed. Now, Ariana did tune in the show from home. She shared video footage of Liam's performance on her Instagram feed. So it was totally legit.
She at least was a virtual participant.
She was a virtual participant. And that's not all Ariana is sharing on Instagram. She has been teasing new music for the past several months. She's working on her fourth album. It's the follow-up to Dangerous Woman from 2016. And for the first time, she's working with Pharrell Williams. Mm. And this makes me happy because I'm a big fan of Pharrell's music. Not only is his own stuff great, he seems to bring out the best in other artists as well. So I'm really looking forward to Ariana Grande's fourth album. And by all accounts, we should be getting it later this year.
We wish Ariana all the best and quick recovery. And also, you know, putting out an album is tiring work. I mean, there's a lot of effort involved in that.
It is. It is. I mean, sometimes we think that these celebrities lead lives of leisure. But in fact, it does take a lot of work. Putting an album together is a lot of work.
The creative process sometimes comes easily. Sometimes it's labored. Mm-hmm. It's always intensive. And then you have the logistics of recording and putting it together, the associated videos and all of the other releases that go along with it.
Yeah, when you're an artist of Ariana Grande's stature, when you're planning an album, it's a complete marketing strategy. You have to think about merchandising tie-ins. You have to think about videos. Of course, there's going to be an accompanying tour. It's a massive undertaking.
To us, these things just pop out there. They drop. And one thing that drops each and every week is the Top 20 Countdown. Ray McDonald is your host, and believe me, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work that goes into it. You'll want to check it out each and every week on VOA 1, as well as his Twitter feed.
Always come for my Twitter feed. I'm always putting up interesting stuff just for you. It's Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud and streaming each and every day on VOA Asia Facebook and voanews.com. We also like to hear from you. Write to us on Facebook at VOA Asia or send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks to everyone in Taipei, Taiwan, who's been listening on CCU Radio at National Chung Cheng University in Taipei. Our thanks to go to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Dan Crafton, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington.
Have a great day.